Station for Talk 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
It's 8 o'clock.
The news update
on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Nigeria Info.
The Lagos State Governor, Babajide Sanwo-Olu, has expressed satisfaction with the large number of optometrists remaining in the country in spite of persistent brain drain. The governor made this known at a conference organized by the Nigerian Optometric Association, Lagos State Charter, to commemorate the annual celebration of the World Optometry Day in Lagos. The celebration day started in 1986 by the International Optometric and Optical League to recognize the growing profession of optometry in the world. Justice Abiola Shaladoye of Lagos Sexual Offences and Domestic Violence Court Ikeja sentenced the 51-year-old Obregbo Palmer to life imprisonment for defiling his colleague's 9-year-old daughter. Palmer was sentenced to life imprisonment after he was found guilty as charged by the state government. Delivering judgment yesterday, the judge said that testimony of the survivor and the medical doctor showed that the convict committed the offence. Also, Justice Shaladoye ordered that the convict's name be written in the sexual offence register as maintained by Lagos State. There are indications that the Central Bank of Nigeria will today, Thursday, commence disbursement of old Naira notes to deposit money banks yesterday. This is to step up efforts to end the biting currency scarcity that has inflicted pain on millions of bank customers nationwide. The Apex Bank has directed deposit money banks to pick up 1,500 and 200 Naira notes from its offices. Israel's Prime Minister says he will press on with his responsible legal reforms despite continuing protest over them. The passing of a new law on Thursday that makes it harder for court to remove a leader deemed unfit for office has angered many people. It is considered to be in the interest of the incumbent Benjamin Netanyahu, who is on trial for corruption. Hours after the vote, opponents began what they called a day of paralysis. Samuel Chukwueze looks set to earn his 25th cap for Nigeria when they take on Guinea-Bissau in a 2023 Africa Cup of Nations qualifier today, Friday, in Abuja. The VRL winger, who made his debut for the Super Eagles in 2018 against Uganda in a friendly, has scored 4 goals in the 24 games he has featured in for the 3-time AFCON winners. Chukwueze's last goal for the Super Eagles was on January 15, 2022 against Sudan at the 2021 AFCON tournament in Cameroon. He also scored against Lesotho and South Africa. Remember, nothing good ever comes out of violence. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. It's about the size of the update. At 9, we have the headlines next for you. In the meantime, let's move on to the crossfire now. I'm Sharif Quadri. Good morning to you, Lagos.
Take charge of what you hear and when to listen.
All at your convenience. It's there on our mobile app and website.
Download the mobile app on iOS and Play Store. Or visit www.nigeriainfo.fm.
99.3. Let's talk.
This is The Voice Note.
The Voice Note.
On 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Ruling class economist and apologist kept telling us that close to 50 million liters of PMS, petrol, was being smuggled across our borders on a daily basis. Now, let us tell you why this figure is a complete lie. Now, 50 million liters of fuel will require 1,600 fuel tankers with a capacity of 33,000 liters. That means the biggest tankers, the long ones, not the small ones. It will require each 1,600 each to transport across our borders on a daily basis, 50 million liters. What this means is that you need 1,600 trucks to cross the border and come back into Nigeria every day. That's two trips. Two trips a day to go, come back, so that they can go back tomorrow again and on a daily basis. And so we ask ourselves, tankers are not needles. Tankers are not spirits. They are not. I mean, so how can 1,600 tankers cross our borders, even if we have a 1,600 kilometer border line, even if each one is positioned and they cross from each 1 kilometer apart, how can a country, how can a ruling class actually justify the fact that 1,600 tankers cross its border every day, 2 trips every day? This requires a driver, Abi, at least one loader, that is 3,200 persons are involved in this trade. Eh? Just there. Eh? What about security? What about, it's simply a fallacious argument. It is either it is not true, or that the Nigerian state is complicit in the smuggling, and that the Nigerian state is actually providing protection for the smuggling. It's either of those two. It cannot be anything else.
Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
The nation's number one talk station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Lagos, good morning to you. Thank you for tuning in and thank you for staying with us. It's 6 minutes past the hour right now, going on 7 in about 6 seconds. I'm Sharif Quadri. It's a pleasure to know that you're there. If you're tuning in for the very first time, it's a Morning Crossfire. It comes your way Monday through Friday from 5 a.m. in the morning. Yeah, and we talk issues, big issues, all kinds of issues. As long as you're talking about them, we'll bring them here, you know, for you to talk about. This morning, We'll be talking about the elections and the assessment of the elections. This time, I have on the show British Deputy High Commissioner in Lagos, Ben Lueling-Jones. He joins me live now. Mr. Ben, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you here. Let's start, by the way. Let me hear from you the assessment of the gubernatorial and the presidential elections. Well, I know you were here.
Yeah, no, I was here. I was in Lagos all the way through, actually. We've issued two statements, one after the presidential, one after the gubernatorial, on behalf of the UK. And I think there was a qualitative difference between both. And I'll be honest, our statement, if anyone saw it this week, and if you haven't, go to at UK in Nigeria, and you'll see it, is a lot more critical. And we ourselves in Lagos, my team saw serious issues around intimidation, pressure on voters. And certainly, before the election, I was talking about the kind of ethnic tension that was being created, and that, you know, there were people chanting anti-Igbo messages walking along the streets by polling units, which is totally unacceptable. So, you know, not just in Lagos, but in Enugu, in Rivers, where we had teams as well, and in other places, it was a very much tougher day, and it shouldn't have been for voters. And I think my message is, you know, we saw people vote in spite of that. That's what's truly impressive about that election, that people said, I'm going to go and vote. It's my right to vote. And good that they did, but they shouldn't face that pressure.
They shouldn't. I totally agree with you. But looking at the elections generally, the 2023 general election, what will be your reaction to that?
So I think every election must be looked at in terms of the time perspective. So 1999 to 2023, and there are huge improvements and changes. So the BVAS technology, I know there are many criticisms, but I think it did reduce the amount of overvoting considerably. I think that's it's a huge thing. I think there was an improvement even in the 3 weeks between the presidential and gubernatorial in INEC's performance. The IREV upload worked much more quickly, dramatically quickly than it had, which is good to see. I think we had a competition in a way that perhaps we haven't seen before with three parties, more than three candidates in many gubernatorials, but certainly three big parties. That's great. That's good. And I think we had more people voting for the first time than perhaps ever we've seen. It's hard to know that, right? Because you don't quite know who's voting, but gut sense, I think, was quite clearly felt. My hope is that more people vote next time, that it's easier to vote, that the electoral roll is, you know, improved so that it does reflect as many people as wish to vote, and it's easy to vote and people do vote. And that the first-time voters this time, some of whom I know may have been disappointed, and I understand that, reflect on the importance of engaging not just in the election, but the period up to the election, what they want from the election coming forth. I voted for the first time many years ago and my party lost. But I still vote, you know, because it matters. So I think it's really important to keep engaged. But I really hope as well that politicians reflect on what happened last weekend and why you just want people to vote for you for the right reasons. You don't need to stop people voting. You don't need to intimidate people. You don't need to try and make it hard to vote. The opposite. You want people to vote for you. You're not stopping people voting. That's a big lesson for democracy in Nigeria that has to be learned, I think. And people want it to be learned now.
I mean, I'm glad that you addressed the first-time voters, right? It's very, very important that you hear that, because after the elections, we saw videos of people tearing their PVC, shredding it, some tearing their passports, shredding it. Yeah. And I'm glad that you've told them now that, I mean, I always say that the business of building a country is not just, is not done by just one election. It's a continuous thing. You keep toiling, you keep working.
Absolutely.
You don't ever give up.
No, and, I know that people will say, well, our expectations are high, we want more now. I understand that. I want more now for democracy in Nigeria too, but that comes with building from, not just from this, but before this, you know, the effort that people have put in, the effort they're continuing to put in, the legal challenges that will come, which we will also be watching extremely closely, actually. Very interested to see how those go. It's very important they're allowed to be done transparently. There's a lot of data there, which the IREV has put out there.
Yeah.
We can all see it. So let's have a look and see what the courts do with it. And quite rightly, the pressure on the courts, not pressure, but the transparency around the courts, I think, not the pressure, the transparency around the courts is really, really important. So, you know, democracy is a journey. You know, we've had an experience of parliamentary democracy in the UK for a lot longer. So, you know, some of these issues are never going to arise in the UK as they do in Nigeria. But in Nigeria, the progress is so much more quick than it was in the UK.
Oh, really?
Well, you think 24 years, you know, 1999 to 2023.
Yeah.
What's happened in Nigeria in terms of, you know, the kind of people who now are able to vote, the fact that you have, you know, parliamentary democracy, or you have democracy in the way that you do. You know, it took 100 and something years for the UK to get to that point. So I think we've seen that pace of change. And I think we'll see an acceleration after this point too. So I know why people are disappointed. I know some people will dial in saying, you know, it's not acceptable. I understand that. I do understand that point of view. What I'm saying is don't give up. It's really important to keep trying.
Indeed, it is. Now, let's talk about what you mentioned earlier about what plagued the elections, right from the campaign period leading up to the election. You hear spate of ethnic issues in Nigeria. If you come down to Lagos, you know how it played out. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, and how do you suppose the issues can be resolved?
Yeah, so let's be specific. There were some people, I'll name names, Femi Fanikodi. What is he saying? Why is he saying it? I don't understand. I mean, I do understand, but it's wrong. And it's wrong from my perspective that he would speak on behalf of a party and that party doesn't just not just distance themselves, but say, stop doing that. That's wrong. It's wrong to say that. I've said it before on the show, you know, if you live in London, you're a Londoner. The British Pakistani mayor of London is a Londoner. The British Indian Prime Minister lives in London. My boss, the British Foreign Secretary, James Cleverly, British Sierra Leonean, lives in London. They're Londoners. It's fine. So why is it that people who vote, who pay tax, who work, who provide teachers, who build businesses, who create jobs, who live in Lagos, who happen to be from a different ethnicity to some other people, are not Lagosian? Of course they are. And Lagos is the strength of Lagos is the strength of its diversity.
Yeah.
And if Lagos can't be that kind of cosmopolitan melting pot of culture and language and all the things it should be, then really, how is Lagos going to succeed? So I think the right question to people who've been driving this ethnic religious kind of language is, when you go to cities around the world like London, let's see if you know how you see that. What do you see when you see that? Because the success of those places is not built upon division; it's built upon unity. So I think there are people who are still using that kind of language now who should stop. And I think the parties who they represent should be saying to them, you stop now. This is not in our name and you're wrong.
So the parties generally, they need to take a position and take that position publicly.
They do. I don't see why they don't, to be honest. To me, it's really important. People who've said, I'm part of a party's press and media campaign. Well, the party itself should say, no, you're not on this issue and you should stop. And we do not agree. And I know that some leaders very clearly said, you know, we're about unity and so on.
Yes.
And that's good. And I encourage that. The problem is if you've got, on the other hand, people over here who are very clearly associated with the party, who are giving another message and there isn't any kind of calling out of that. Well, what do you take from that as a voter? And certainly the people who were chanting anti-Igbo messages on Saturday, they certainly took something from what they read and what they saw and what they heard. And I think that's wrong. So to me, you know, I'm not being an idealist about this. I recognize people have different views on these things, but it's about the incitement, the kind of ethnic incitement that people are doing, and they know what they're doing, and they need to stop.
Mm, indeed. Now, let's talk about the visa bans. When will the UK issue these to the persons found subverting democratic processes? I saw the statement put out. And first is, do we have names on the list already?
We have a list, yeah. I was up at Abuja this week. We're working through a list. We don't publish those names. I know people say we should, but you know, we have laws that protect.
I was going to ask you to at least give us like five names.
No, I understand the question. It's just, you know, the law, data protection, prevents me from doing that. The UK is a rule-bound society. We don't do that. But we do have a list. We're working it through. I went to Abuja specifically so we can look at it. We said that we would do this, so we will do this. And you know, we're gathering the kind of information that would enable us to do this around specific individuals. You know, we watched very closely. I was in Lagos the whole time. Mm-hmm. We had people on the ground in key places. This stuff's in the public domain as well. It's not difficult to find. So, no, we won't publish the names. We don't do that. We can't do that. You know,
can we at least get a number, like 20, 50, 100?
At the moment, the list is sort of somewhere between 5 and 10, but it's a list that's growing.
Hmm. Are we looking at politicians here, or both politicians and non-politicians?
Yeah, I think. I mean, I won't go into so much more detail. it's an excellent question, but you know, quite rightly, the UK law constrains me. But I think the point is, it's people who've been involved in the political process in whatever respect, people who've said done the wrong thing, and quite clearly were intending to do that. And in spite of some of the warnings that we gave and some of the messages that we gave, just ignored them.
Is this the first time UK government is doing this?
No, we've done it before. And as again, for data protection reasons, we don't talk about where and who and how, but we've done it before in other places. And I think it's...
In Nigeria,
again, I'm not going to talk about that specifically, but definitely we have done it. And from our perspective, it's something that's available. We said we'd do it. You know, our minister said they'd do it, and we're going to follow through. So, I don't know. I think for me, it's important to not just to reflect on that UK action, but to reflect on what happens here in Nigeria as well.
Yeah.
You know, as I said earlier, people can just stop saying the wrong thing. That would be important to do now. Mm. People can reflect on what they want to do in approaching the next election. People can reflect on the court process. So we're part, perhaps, of the response to this, but just one part.
What does it mean, this visa ban? What does it mean to the UK? What does it mean to Nigeria?
Well, I mean, I think what it means to the individuals, really, let's be honest, you know, it's targeted at individuals, you know, and we look specifically at individuals who may wish to travel or indeed have done the wrong thing in other respects. So, you know, that's what it means. For Nigeria, that's a question for Nigerians, you know, we're the UK. But for me, I think it's a response the UK would make to people who consciously have done the wrong thing.
Mm. How long is this ban supposed to last?
Well,
is it like a lifetime thing, or
it's at the discretion of the UK government? We'll have to see. Dependent on circumstance and so on. But yeah, I mean, it's one tool I think that's available, which we will use. And I think, as I say, we should look at the range of other things that Nigeria itself will do, and Nigerian institutions. I know the EFCC, for example, has said it will investigate issues of vote buying. Well, let's see that, shall we? It's important to happen. I know civil society are raising complaints around the performance of police in some respects. Well, let's see that. Let's see what happens. So I think let's not just look at one aspect of this. Let's look at what across the board Nigerians can do to, you know, to improve the process that they themselves want to see improved. That's what we want too.
Mm, indeed. Now that the elections are over, one of the major players of the election is INEC.
Yes.
What would be your advice to INEC?
Well, you know, I think INEC responded to some of the criticism that they received, certainly around the IREV and certainly around logistics. We saw, and it was, I think, a significant improvement between the two elections. I think the technology as well, I think, you know, worked at least in one respect to credit very well. And then it did work eventually in terms of upload. I think it's not really my advice to INEC, because, you know, INEC has got a tough job in a tough place. But I think my question is how there can be more confidence in the process overall. Mm. I think that's the right question. Mm. And some of that comes down to INEC, but some of that comes down to the way in which people respond to INEC. So, for example, I went to some polling units where, you know, the voters themselves were there to support, essentially, right, how do we help you set up? Everyone get in a line, let's get this done. Mm. We don't want these people coming near. in some places, the kind of response, particularly from people who I'm sure had been directed to be there, was to disrupt INEC and was to make it hard and to make it difficult. And I think it's about how parties not just say but do the right thing in respect of INEC and make sure they are actually supporting the process. And again, that's a huge difference to the UK. The Electoral Commission, you know, it's got a long time in running, but the idea there'd be any pressure on a polling unit is just absolutely ridiculous. Here in Nigeria, we see this so often. So I think it's about INEC, but it's about how people engage and support INEC too.
And that brings me to democratic awareness of the people. Looking at how people, I mean, the illustration that you've shared now about how people wanted to help INEC set up in one polling unit, the next polling unit, you see people there not to help but to disrupt in INEC processes. And you see a lot of people this time, more than ever before, came out to wanting to cast their ballot because they want to be part of the process. And you could see that definitely there's been increased awareness about politics and democracy. But that, in your opinion, Mr. Ben, that signifies understanding of what democracy is all about.
I think so. I hope so. I mean, I think, you know, why people vote is always a question. You know, it's and it's there. Their vote is their secret, right? And that's the right thing. But I think that people thought this time, and I hope next time, I am going to vote because democracy means something to me. I want to choose my leaders. I want to make people accountable.
Yeah,
that's so important. And I think the right reflection for people who didn't vote, because to be honest, the voting turnout was low. And I'm sure the electoral roll has, you know, a lot of people who, you know, may have moved and so on. But nonetheless, I think even in spite of that, fewer people voted than were expected. So the right question to people who didn't vote is, what would have happened had you voted? What did you think you wanted to see? If you don't vote next time, what do you think is going to happen again? So I think the right question to voters is, you know, if you're not involved in the process by directly voting, you're taking yourselves away from that decision-making space. And it is difficult to vote in Nigeria. Completely respect that. But, you know, so few people voted really relative to the number that could. And in polling units, I saw, you know, 20% of voters potentially a maximum turned out. And that was disappointing.
Indeed. So in general, how will you assess the state of Nigeria's democracy in general now? Not just from the voters' perspective now, in total.
So look, I still think it's a positive trajectory. I do. You know, if you look back to 1999, the resumption of democracy, 24 years, uninterrupted democracy. I don't think anyone seriously is talking about a return to any kind of military dictatorship, any kind of, you know, suspension of democracy. I don't think people see that as a good thing, and that's good. I think what you see is increasing competition, increasing choice, increasing discussion of policy. You see, you know, at least an awareness now of why these issues around ethnic religious tension are so dangerous and challenging in Nigeria. So it's a positive trajectory, but I'm not naive about the problems, and we're here to support, you know, that next step, that next move, and the improvement of democracy in Nigeria.
What do you say to people who sometimes say UK is interfering in our democracy?
So, like, we believe, not just in the UK, but around the world, when people choose their leaders, they get better outcomes. We believe that everywhere in the world, actually, even in places that are yet to embrace democracy. So, if people think we're interfering, I'm sorry that they do, but I don't think so. I think we're here to support, and our job is to say, keep with democracy, make it work, improve it, where there are problems, improve it. But we honestly believe democracy is the best system for people having an accountable, better government.
How would you also assess Nigeria's government, their response to criticism, especially about certain processes?
I think it's difficult to be in government. It's difficult. It's to be elected is difficult. To be in government is difficult, to be honest, and I've seen both sides of that. I think what I would say, there's an opportunity with a new government coming in to look at these questions again. You know, what is it that people want to see? How can there be perhaps increased communication around some of these issues, explanation? I think sometimes people will assume the worst unless you explain to them what is exactly happening. And I think sometimes that's happened in the last few months. So I don't know. I know it's a tough job to be in government in Nigeria, and it will be. But I think the important thing is what can be done next to try and improve and address some of the communication around those issues.
You know, that's happened to my last question. In 4 years' time, Nigerians will be, you know, going into the polls. I'd like to know what you want to see different, what you want to see improved upon, what you want to see that we can do better. But hold on to that thought. We need to take this short break. Lagos will be back. Stay with us.
to the home of great talk and exciting conversations.
Many times, I think the word submission used in the context of marriage is very ambiguous.
When you eat granola too much, you will get eye problems. Or when you dig garri too much, you get eye problems. Is this true?
Just like you said, these are myths.
He said, women, speak life into your husbands, even when he's not acting right. And I almost threw my phone at him.
99.3 Nigeria Info.
Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
The nation's number one talk station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Yes, we're back. It's 8:33 going on 34. And if you're just tuning in, you're welcome. I'm Sharif Quadri. Mr. Ben William-Jones, the British Deputy High Commissioner in Lagos, is here with me in the studio. And we'll be talking about Nigeria's general elections, the assessment, the news that you all heard yesterday about the UK putting together a list to place some certain individuals on visa ban. And we've talked about that as well this morning. Ben, thank you again for coming through.
No, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, let me ask you my final question. Or should we? I think we can take one or two calls.
I'm good.
I think then I'll come back and ask you. You can now answer that the last question I posed to you earlier. Mm. Lagos, feel free to call in and let's hear your thoughts on our conversation this morning. 01-277-0993, 277-1993, 277-2993 and 277-3993. Female only line is 01-465-7190. That's for female callers and female callers only, please. And when you call in, go straight to the point. We'd like to get your thoughts as quickly as possible so we can get to others. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Sherry.
Yes, please, morning to you.
This is Pastor Ladi for calling from Orilegum.
You're welcome.
Good morning to your guest. My question to him is this. Why is it that the beneficiaries of these malpractices of elections are not the one directly affected? Why is it all those who join in perpetrating it? What happened to the beneficiary? Gogo, for instance, if they help the governor or a president or a senator through any illegal means or anyhow means to get to power. Mm. Why is it that they are not the one that is being affected directly?
By the visa ban, you mean, Abi?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Look, we're not ruling anything out. We're looking at all individuals who we think would have been associated, and we'll look at the evidence and information we need. So, as I say, I can't say who, but we're looking at, we're not ruling anything out.
Okay, all right. Let's take another call. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes, this morning to you.
It's Joy calling.
Talk to me, Joy.
What I want to say this morning is that since they want to ban some people in Nigeria, I want to beg them again to stop them not to be carrying our money to their country anymore. Thank okay. you.
Thank you, too. How about that? Loot at funds.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of work's been done to try and stop leakage of funds from Nigeria to anywhere in the world, actually. But we're doing a lot of work ourselves. We've returned some money, but there's, you know, again, we don't comment on the ongoing investigations around funds. I think anyone who's trying to put money illegally in the UK should reflect on what happens when they arrive at Heathrow and see if that's going to be something they enjoy or not. So I think people need to think very hard.
Okay. All right. Sounds promising. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes, please.
Yeah, my name is Mike. I call from Ikeja.
Welcome, Mike.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is that it's very, very shameful something for a whole country, for someone to come from other country to come solve issue for us. It's very embarrassing. That's all I have to say. Bye. Mm.
He feels so embarrassed that the UK needs to now be tidying up our process for us.
I don't think anyone should feel embarrassed. People should speak out. I think it's right that we're here to You know, the bond between the UK and Nigeria, but between British and Nigerian people, is very, very strong. So, you know, we're trying to do our bit, but no, it's good to hear his voice.
Mm. Okay. Let me come to my last question about, you know, some of the things that you've seen happen during this election cycle. The next cycle is in 4 years. What are the changes or improvements you'd like to see?
Yeah, so I think let's talk about the things that can improve on. So first of all, for INEC, the process, it would be great if it was just easier to vote. Let's make it easier to vote. Let's get the electoral roll registered into a correct place, collecting a PVC, if you have to do that, isn't so difficult. That you know where your polling unit is, the INEC staff are trained well in advance, that the kind of pressure around the polling units is less. I think secondly, let's see the law enforcement authorities really reflect on how to not just secure the polling unit, but the space around it. So you can't have people chanting, can't have people preventing. I think that's really, really, really important. I think some of the basic intimidation, the violence, the kind of language we saw, the pressure on people, and it's still more egregious in the sort of periods in which people were, you know, let's be honest, there were some LGAs in some parts of Nigeria where, you know, the delay in announcing the result was extreme. Why is that? You know, there needs to be a lot more trust in the process, but that comes, I think, from there being a lot more strength in the institution. So I think that's really, really important. I think INEC should take those issues seriously, but I think actually those supporting INEC should take them seriously too. I mean, you know, I always think the heroes of the election are the kind of the young youth corpus who are sitting at those polling units making it happen. I mean, those guys, you know, it's incredible what they do. But really, for them to be able to perform, you know, everything has to work up to that point. So I think it's helping that too. So look, as I said, I am optimistic. I'm an optimist, and I believe strongly, not just in democracy, but democracy in Nigeria. And I think it is a positive trajectory in spite of some of the challenges, very real challenges people experience. I think the lesson of this election is not give up. The lesson is keep trying. And the lesson is keep voting. And, you know, if the people next door to you and the people next door to them didn't vote this time, ask them why and get them involved in the process, because things change when people get involved.
Let's take a few more calls as we go on the show this morning. Let's see who he's here. Good morning to you. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, this morning to you.
Hello?
We can hear you. Good morning to you.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Christian, calling from Lagos.
Welcome.
So, my question actually is to the Deputy High Commissioner. So, all over the world, we have instances where people that have been accused of or found to be guilty of terrorism and these other stuff are published, you know, just to make the world aware that, you know, these people are engaged in terrorism. But in this case now, you are trying to, because what the UK is trying to achieve is deterrence, right? So why can't they also publish this list so that it will deter people who are planning to disrupt the process of election, right? You know?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you too. Yeah.
Look, I mean, I hear that point, and I may even have some sympathy with it, but, you know, the law is the law in the UK. Data protection means that these names can't be published, but, you know, I've certainly reflected on the value sometimes. Sometimes what happens is people themselves say, do you know what, the UK just banned me from a visa. Well, you know, that may happen. Some people may want to come out and talk about the experience they've had. But at the moment, the law prevents us from doing that. But I understand the point that the gentleman's making.
Talking about data protection, I mean, so we had some EU-EOM who came in, EU Electron Observation Mission. They came into the office and we had a meeting. After the meeting, we took pictures. And we had to sign some documents.
Did you?
Data protection. Like, they want to be free to be able to use the picture that they took. So that data protection is very important. I was like,
it's important.
It's just picture now. Yes.
they're good. I met those guys. They're good people. Like, the rules are very exacting. But you can take my picture later. Don't worry. It'll be fine.
Let's take another call. Hey, that caller is gone. Good morning to you. Good morning. Good morning, are you here? We can't hear anything. Can you hear me? Okay, the person can't hear me, so I'm just going to hang up right here. Oh, Mr. Ben, we have to go now. It's been awesome having you here.
I've got one more point. Can I make it?
Yes, basically, go on.
And it's for you. It's about journalists. We saw journalists harassed during this election. We saw specific camera crews beaten up during this election.
Right.
There is nothing acceptable about that at all. And I think that's one thing I think all Nigerians can agree on, whatever else they've heard today, is that the freedom of the press matters. These people are out there reporting. So if I had one thing to say as well, like, you know, protect your journalists. They're the ones who are calling this stuff out. But yeah, back to you. Sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. It's fine. And thank you for making that appeal. Because to be very honest with you, you could see the paradigm being shifted during the last US elections, where the media was visibly polarized and visibly divided. And people would think that that only happened in America, but no, it spread across all over the world. It's almost as though, you know, something was something was let go from the American press to global press, where press men can visibly now, you know, take position on things. And we know that press should be fair, press should be balanced, and that does not warrant the press being attacked or you know, it doesn't justify it whatsoever. But I can guarantee that the Nigerian press are doing a whole lot, even under some really nasty situations,
absolutely
really nasty conditions, to still get their job done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you look at the people who are calling out some of the ethnic hatred and so on, they should be protected. They should not be the people coming under pressure. But look, you know, I think there's a lot that, you know, can be learned from these elections and a lot that can be built from, and that's key.
So Ben Llewelyn-Jones, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Lagos, we'll take a break right now. When we return, I have something that I'd like to share with you. I'll be back in a moment.